Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. From Penn State University comes a new study about how eating dried fruit is linked with a better diet quality and healthier markers in your body. So don't be afraid to toss a handful of raisins or dried apples into your next salad or your next smoothie. Raisins are terrific. After all, what is a raisin? It's a dried fruit. Think of all the grapes, white grapes, red grapes, blue grapes, black grapes. Do you have a raisin to match that? Think of what is a plum. Well, when it dries, you got a prune. But just don't get any of them sulfured. It's the sulfur dioxide that causes the problems. That's really bad for your lungs. Even for those of you who are wine drinkers, make sure that it's sulfate-free, has no sulfates, because that can cause severe allergic reactions. But having some dried fruit every day, just as a snack, make your own little, a snack pack, is good. Dried cherries, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, and goji berries. Just take some with you. It's excellent. That's what this study's showing. So the people who had some dried fruit on a regular basis were healthier than those who did not. And so simple. This was also a researcher from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and at Penn State researcher found this. A lot of people don't eat dried fruit because they think, well, I'm getting a lot of sugar. Not true. You will get extra sugar if you get the sugar dried ones that have a coating of sugar on the outside. You can almost always tell because the fruit looks too natural. It looks too yellow or too red. Most of the dried fruits like peaches, nectarines, pears, bananas, are going to be dark, kind of looking, well, they look withered, like a shoe leather. But those are the healthiest ones to have. So, simple advice. Now, we have a new study from Abu Dhabi Department of Health about a healthy diet associated with faster recovery from viral illnesses. This includes COVID-19. I'll get to that in a moment and a lot of others. Just want to let you know that today I'm going to share some new insights from a scientific study. It doesn't tell you to wear or not wear masks. There's scientific research that shows masks are protective, and others show that it's not. So that is not the issue. The issue is, are masks safe? And no one has discussed this. So we have an exclusive on our program today. So whether you wear or don't wear a mask, what happens when you put it on? The fibers in the mask. That is something that everyone should be interested in. Everyone, pro or con, the issue. Also today, we have always believed that by vaccinating our children with up to 72 different vaccines before the age of 6, that was protecting them. A Dr. Jennifer Margolius says no, vaccinated children are sicker. We'll share that study with you. And also, what the COVID vaccine hype fails to mention, Richard Gale will explain what's not being told by the manufacturers. For example, if you were told, here's what we believe, because no one knows yet, what we believe the vaccines, either the Moderna vaccine or the Pfizer vaccine or whichever one hits the market first. Here's what we believe it will do. Well, if you take an honest look at that, you're going to say, that's not a whole lot. I could do better by building up my own immune system, taking nutrients without exposing my body to harm. Now, those who are more educated in the health sciences, nurses, doctors, dietitians, They'll know this, whether or not they will choose to allow their body to be the first massive worldwide experiment just to make profit for Pfizer and praise for Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates. That is a separate issue. But we'll give you the facts that even the vaccine manufacturers cannot dispute. These are not magic panaceas, as the media would have you believe, and legislators would all suggest that you take even laws to mandate them. I'll get into that today. Also, environmentally, Utah State University has a study showing that there is now irreversible heat waves and a drier climate in parts of the world that is changing everything. So that's important also. And RFK, we're doing something together. He called me yesterday. We had a conversation. I'll show you what we're doing next Wednesday. But today, I'm going to share with you an article that was sent by Rita DiCarlo, a major activist, cares very much about the failures of the mental health paradigm, and shares a lot of information on health. So Robert F. Kennedy came out swinging on the COVID vaccine. I'll share his comments. Chris Hedges came out swinging against the ruling elite's war on truth, both the Republican and Democrats, Trump and Biden. So a short piece from Chris Hedges. And then today, there'll be in our video bios, we're going to take on two issues. One's very positive. 5 Rules for the Rest of Your Life by Matthew McConaughey. And also Democracy and the Road to Tyranny. So we have a lot to share. And by the way, if you missed yesterday's program, not to be concerned, just go to prn.fm and go to the archives, download the show. And yesterday I made a 6-course gourmet meal, vegan, of course, healthy, for my caretaker and friend, and they enjoyed the meal. And I'll go through some of those recipes, time permitting, so you could have these easy, not difficult to make, but extremely exotic tastes and very healthy. Just add to your repertoire of really nice recipes. One of my friends called me and said, oh, I was in a car. I wanted to hear your show. I knew it was going to be very upbeat and positive, especially the half hour talking about what to do if you feel insecure about anything. And but I didn't. It wasn't on WBAI. One more reason to write down this number so no matter where you're at, you can listen live. Please write this number down. 774-337-6033. 774-337-6033. And also yesterday I did a Zoom from London or Great Britain with Elizabeth McCormick. Elizabeth went over there to visit her parents 9 months ago and hasn't been able to return because the lockdown wouldn't allow anyone except special permits to come back to the United States. But she would take all your mail and find a variety of different issues and read them on the air. She's going to continue that this Monday. Continue to send your questions or your statements to prnstudio@gmail.com. And then they'll be forwarded on to her and she will address them. So let's go back to health and healing. And there's a new study, and this is from Abu Dhabi. Patients with COVID-19 leave the hospital faster if they maintain a healthy diet in normal life because their immune system is stronger to fight back against the virus. So says the Department of Health at Abu Dhabi. The study on the lifestyle of COVID patients ages 18 to 60 saw the participants that were about 1,038 persons and they assess the relationship between their lifestyle and the virus and the severity of the symptoms. And lo and behold, what we've been saying all along, every day, the study found a statistically significant correlation between diet and length of stay in the hospital to treat the symptoms of COVID-19. It showed that patients who follow a healthy diet had a lower hospital stay duration than those who did not follow a healthy diet. Therefore, having a healthy diet is very important during the COVID-19 pandemic. Eating more healthy fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds, you're going to recover from the virus faster. We know we have a lot of physicians and scientists and nurses and dietitians listening to this show. If anyone out there in the health field would like to have me prepare a COVID recovery menu, I'll be happy to do so. So just send that information or your who you are, where you work, your credentials, and what you're interested in to prnstudio@gmail.com, and I will return that. And I do it as a public service. There's no charge, just like I do every day here. So what we've been saying all along is true. Now, one of the delights that finished the day, but I made sure there was an hour passed between the main dinner and dessert, was I made a raw cacao, flavonoid-rich dessert. And I'll just tell you the recipe. I take raw cacao and I shave it. I put it into a little saucer. I put a low heat on, very low heat, and then I put a tablespoon of raw coconut oil in the bottom of the pan. Therefore, the cacao doesn't stick to it and burn. And I stir it, and it takes about 4 minutes. That's it. And it liquefies, but you don't want it liquefying completely. You want some little tiny chunks to give it mouthfeel. And so I leave it there. Then you can take a, you can either purchase a natural alcohol-free butterscotch, or you can make it yourself. It's not difficult to make butterscotch. And I make everything from scratch. And the sweetener is always stevia because real cacao is a bitter. I mean, it's very bitter. But putting a little of vanilla stevia into it, you suddenly sweeten it up without any calories. And it's also medicinal. And then you take a persimmons, a ripe persimmons, and you open it up like a floret. And in the middle of that, you put a beet red, that's the inner color, of a dragon fruit. Now, the dragon fruit, many of you probably have not heard of or seen. I actually can grow them, and they can get very large. They're delicious tasting. They have a kind of an ambrosia quality to them and a nice mouthfeel. Very good for digestion, extremely good for inflammation within the intestines, and people who have sour stomach, what historically was called sour stomach, GERD, and it's very soothing. So you peel the red. There's other colors. There's green and yellow, but the green is tasteless. But the red is very tasty, and it's very soft. It's very, very soft, one of the softest fruits there is. And after you peel it, you slice it into coins. In this case, the coin was about the size of a, double the size of a silver dollar. And you lay it in the middle of the plate. Around it, you present your persimmons in, let's say, four pieces. And then in the middle of that, you put one scoop, not a big scoop, just a relatively small ice cream scoop, about a half a cup, so it's not much, of, well, I had strawberry cheesecake ice cream. It's a vegan ice cream made of coconut, but it has the flavors of a strawberry cheesecake and the mouthfeel of strawberry cheesecake. And you put one scoop in the middle, and then you drizzle in four lines across each other, so you have a nice presentation. And that's dessert. That's what I had yesterday. Gave them. Now, here's a study from the University of Illinois. cacao flavonoids boost brain oxygenation and cognition in healthy adults. Here's what they say, and this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Scientific Reports. The brains of healthy adults recovered faster from a mild vascular challenge, those are microstrokes, by the way, and perform better on complex tests if the participants consume cacao flavonoids beforehand. Hence, I suggest 2 ounces of either a semi-sweet or a 70% chocolate each day. All right? That'll help you. Now, we know that all the flavonoids improve vascular function, and we want a strong vascular function. But this is the first to find a positive effect on brain vascular function and cognitive performance in young, healthy adults. That's very important. This was done at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign Psychology Department. By the way, just so you understand, flavanols are small molecules found in almost all your fruits and vegetables, including chocolate or cacao, C-O-C-O-A. And this gives the fruits and vegetables their bright colors, but it also gives it their vascular benefits. So something to think about. And so now, one more thing that healthy people can do to stay healthier. And by the way, from Postgraduate Institute of Medical Education and Research in India, vitamin D had an immunomodulatory role and in helping SARS-2 infection. So against a randomized placebo-controlled study, one more reason to take your vitamin D every day. And regular green tea drinking improves brain function, National University of Singapore. Yeah. 1 or 2 glasses of green tea each day. And again, don't sweeten it either with a little. Wait, never put honey into boiling water. But once it's steeping and is warm but not hot, and hot food and hot drink is not good for you, it burns the esophagus, but warm is, that's when you put half a teaspoon of Manuka honey in. That is really good. That's giving you some terrific benefits from both. And that's the latest on health and healing. We are 17 minutes into our program. Going to take a break. And when we come back, really important information. Now, mind you, this information is not about whether you should wear or not wear a mask. That's your choice. There's scientific literature on both sides showing benefits or no benefits. This is for everyone to pay attention to. We'll be back in a moment. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world because we're heard worldwide every day. We're the number one progressive radio station and the number one progressive radio program in the world. So we appreciate it when you listen and, most importantly, when you share the information with other people. That's how we, the people, can make a difference. Now, I just also want to mention before I go to the masks, which I'm going to in just a second here, and please make note, and we're posting this. This has already been sent to New York, so Jesse has the story, and it will be posted so you can read it for yourself. So it's not my opinion we're sharing. These are scientific facts, and it's important we pay attention to this. But this coming Sunday, there will be a demonstration and to challenge the lockdown. It'll be in Union Square, Sunday at 1 p.m., 1 o'clock in the afternoon, this Sunday, Union Square. Please practice proper distancing. Please wear a mask, but I suggest an N99 mask, or better still, a face guard, because a face guard prevents particulate matter from coming at you. That's what prevents the sneeze and the cough and the loud talking, screaming, whatever. The particulate matter, hundreds of thousands of beads of water coming out of your mouth over about a 5-minute period, that prevents that. It hits the face guard, not you. Okay? That would be the best. That way you can be around people, see them, and still have a substantial measure of protection. Now, and Richard Gill is standing by. He will be sharing his insights as well on what will likely be the outcome of the vaccines and what can they not promise? What are they not even testing for the vaccines? Because the average person thinks, oh, if I get the vaccine, I'm not going to get COVID, or I'm not going to get it from other people. I'll be protected. There'll be a vaccine herd immunity in schools. But is that what it really means? Can they prove that? Is that what they've tested for? Will it prevent you from dying? Will it prevent you from hospitalizations and serious effects? He will explain. But first, concerning the masks. The authors of this scientific study are Dr. Boris Borovov, Dr. Colleen Huber, and Dr. Makeda. The title of the article is Masks, False Safety, and Real Dangers, Friable Mask Particulate and Lung Vulnerability. Now, I'm going to read parts of this to show you what this means. First, the abstract. I'm quoting, "There is no biological history of mass masking until the current era. It is important to consider possible outcomes of this society-wide experiment. The consequences to health of individuals is yet unknown. Masked individuals have a measurably higher inspiratory flow than non-masked individuals. This study of new masks removed from manufacturers' packaging, as well as laundered cloth masks, examined microscopically." And by the way, the article has all these electron photographs of the mask right out of a package, the mask after you've worn it, the mask after you've washed it, and even the mask at the end of just one day. That's why it's so important. Everyone pay attention, please. Quote, "Loose particulate was seen on each type of mask." That's a red flag, by the way, everyone. "Also, tight and loose fibers were seen on each type of mask." That's a negative. If every foreign particle in every fiber in every face mask is always secure and not detachable by airflow, then there should be no risk of inhalation of such particles and fibers. However, if even a small portion of mask fibers is detachable by respiratory airflow, or if there is debris in mask manufacture or packaging or handling, then there is the possibility of not only entry of foreign material into the airways, but also entry to deep lung tissue and potentially pathological consequences of foreign bodies in the lungs. Quote, "The nose and mouth are the gateways to the lungs for land vertebrates. There is no known history of a species that has begun to voluntarily or involuntarily obstruct, partially obstruct, or filter the orifices to their airways and lungs. We have no biological history of such a species or how they would have adopted or to possibly survive such a novel practice." Then it goes in more to this. And here's where it gets important. Optimal, listen carefully to this. This comes from OSHA. This is the federal government's U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Quote, "Optimal oxygen intake in humans has been calculated in the absence of any obstruction to the airwaves. The U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration has determined that the optimal range of oxygen in the air for humans is between 19.5 and 23.5%. In previous times, before COVID-19 era, OSHA required that any human-occupied airspace where oxygen measured less than 19.5 to be labeled, quote, not safe for workers, end quote. The percentage of oxygen inside a masked airspace generally measures 17.4% within seconds of wearing. Let's back it up. Ideal, okay? The ideal, 19.5 to 23. Dangerous, quote, not safe for workers, less than 19.5. What you're breathing, 17.4. You're already, with every single mask, no matter what type of mask it is, actually it's worth with the kind of mask that I've worn, N99 and on airplanes, N95 to N99, you're below below that. Quote, it has been observed that maximal voluntary ventilation and maximal inspiratory pressure increase during lower availability of oxygen at ascent in altitude, as well as for those who live at high altitudes. Because oxygen is so essential to life, in adequate amounts, humans and animals have developed the ability to sense changes in oxygen concentration and to adapt to such challenges quickly. The medulla oblongata and carotid bodies are sensitive to such changes. Both lower ambient oxygen and increased ambient carbon dioxide stimulates ventilation as the body quickly and steadfastly attempts to acquire more oxygen. As a compensatory mechanism, inspiratory flow is measurably higher in mask wearers than controls. As an aside, that means you have to struggle greater, breathe deeper to get the same amount of oxygen in. So your body's trying to compensate by saying, I need more oxygen. Quote, the question arises, if inspiratory flow is increased above normal while wearing a mask, is every fiber attached to one's face mask secure enough not to be inhaled into the lungs of the mask wearer? Is it good enough for a majority of these fibers to be secure? Or must every part of every mask fiber of every mask be secured at all times? Inhaled cotton fibers, by the way, that's the vast majority of all masks in America, have been shown to cause a subpleural ground glass opacities at the surface of the visceral pleura, as well as the centrolobular and parabronchiovascular interstitial thickening, as well as fibrous thickening of the parabronchial interstitium. It was found by spectral analysis by infrared photography that the foreign bodies in the lungs had an identical pattern to that of cellulose, which must have come from inhaled cotton fibers. Cotton and even silk may contribute to COPD in textile workers. Biocenosis is a pulmonary syndrome related to textile work. When textile workers were exposed to organic dusts from textiles in the workplace, both reversible and irreversible pulmonary conditions such as asthma and COPD developed. It should be remembered that unmasked textile workers would not have such high inspiratory flow as masked individuals. Therefore, there is even more need that the fibers, debris, and other particulate attached to cloth masks would stay entirely, 100%, every fiber, every part of every fiber, and throughout every breath at all times, even down to the size of nanometers. Disposable surgical masks are made of synthetic fibers, including polymers such as polypropylene, polyurethane, polyacrylonitrile, polystyrene, polycarbonate, polyethylene, and polyester. There is an inner layer of soft fibers and a middle layer, which is the melt-blown filter, as well as water-resistant outer layer of non-woven fibers. This study shows that FTIR spectra of the degraded fibers of disposable masks, it found that the disposable face mask, quote, listen carefully, could be emerging as a new source of microplastic fibers as they can degrade, fragment, or break down into smaller sizes and pieces, end quote. Quote, research on synthetic fibers has shown a correlation between inhalation of synthetic fibers and various bronchopulmonary diseases such as asthma, aryngitis, chronic bronchitis, fibrosis, spontaneous pneumothorax, and chronic pneumonia. Cellular proliferation made up of histocytes and fibroblasts were found in the lungs of those exposed to synthetic fibers in ambient air. Local lesions in the lungs showed granulomas and collagen fibers containing both fine dust and long fibers. Some of the lung illnesses from this exposure could be reversed, while others had already progressed to pulmonary fibrosis. Bioburden of masks has also been established. This study found bioburden on each type of mask study, even after one use in a surgical environment. Speaking while wearing masks resulted in a significantly higher bioburden culture from a mask side, the face side of the mask, meaning everyone who's talking while you're wearing a mask, you're breaking down the fibers in the mask. The major area of this study, possible risk of pulmonary fibrosis. Pulmonary fibrosis is among the worst diseases that can be suffered or witnessed. It kills exceedingly slowly by ever thickening the matrix formulation, a kind of scar tissue, obstructing the alveoli and reducing their air exchange. The illness worsens slowly over time and suffocates the victim very gradually. Nothing is available to the sufferer from conventional medicine. Neither medication nor radiation can undo the damage to the fibrous matrix laid down in the lung tissue. Similarly, surgery is not available to eliminate the insidious suffocating mesh that painstakingly takes the life of the unfortunate patient. Neither is any known cure available in the realm of natural or alternative medicine. Neither nutrient, herb, nor any other known treatment can even reduce the fibrogenesis, let alone eliminate it. The 5-year survival rate is only 20%. The only remedy against this scourge is diligent prevention of small and microscopic inhaled foreign bodies. Inhaled particles, particularly nanoparticles, can begin the process of pulmonary fibrosis by forming free radicals such as superoxide anions. The resulting oxidative stress promotes inflammatory responses and surface reactivity. The pathogenesis of idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis begins when type 2 alveoli are injured and epithelia is not fully healed. Interstitial fibroblasts differentiate into myofibroblasts, which gather in fibrotic foci and form fibers and contractile properties. This is followed by synthesis and deposit of extracellular matrix, which seems to be a key in suffocating the air exchange. And it continues. So, what you have to understand, and it shows you the photographs of the masks, it shows you the microscopic mask, the cup mask, the soiled mask, the wash mask, and none of this, none of what I'm telling you has been discussed by Anthony Fauci or the other individuals or the New York Times or anyone else, because if they told you the truth, even the surgical mask, it shows you how quickly they can be soiled. And so we have to understand what we're dealing with. And they show you, and I'm sure you've all seen it, when masks are used and the particulate and fibers can become further loosened. And that's what you swallow. That's what you breathe in. That's what this article is about. So, whether you wear a mask or not, that's your business. I'm not here to tell you to wear a mask or not, and I haven't. I'm telling you there's science on both sides of the issue. I'm telling you that no one has told you how dangerous the masks are and what can happen and what does happen. So this is important, what I just shared with you. All right, because we could be trying to fight one virus and creating a whole far more lethal to the general population condition. Because if you don't know what it's like to have COPD, I've helped, well, he's been on this program. His name's Ron Atkins. And we reversed his COPD. Four separate board-certified pulmonologists could no longer find it in his system. But it was a really challenging process. He was going into hospice care where his two brothers passed from COPD. Instead, he came to a retreat. That was, what, three and a half years ago or so. So that's the story. Now let's go to Richard Gale standing by. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary.
Okay, Richard, I'd like for you to address first the issue that this study shares with us, the photographs, the scientific evidence, and that no one's going to take seriously, that will be destroyed, be deleted, deplatformed, wherever it's at, it'll be gone. But at least this audience will know a truth that Anthony Fauci dare not share with anyone. Your thoughts on that, then tell us what the vaccine manufacturers cannot promise this because it was never included in their research protocols.
Yeah, certainly. Well, we've seen that there's been just an information war going on concerning mask wearing. There could be a psychological reason for why they're doing this. When you put on a mask, there's a submission. We're submitting to something. And so I think there is this degree of submission. It's also a way to pacify the public because a lot of the protests have just kind of we watched them die down. That were happening before. So there, my opinion, we'll just see this ongoing war and battle between the science and what the science says, and then there will be the medical bureaucrats who are just going to deny the science. And so I don't see anything really changing through it, except it will just be a continuation because the agenda that's really being forced upon us right now has nothing to do with science any longer. I see that just throughout the entire COVID thing at this point. It's become just so politicized. So that's really pretty much my statements on that. But I would like to just speak a little bit more on the vaccines because that's the main headline news that we keep hearing. And it's kind of interesting how there's this parallel relationship that we're witnessing right now with all the reports of the increased number of cases that are being stated in parallel to how fast can we get this vaccine on the market. And they're talking about the middle of December, just a couple weeks away. I'm not sure that we could say we just simply don't know what they're testing for and not testing for. There's been a real lack of transparency in this entire exercise of creating the vaccines. There seems to be a lot of withholding of data, and many physicians and doctors and even medical journals are stating this, that we just don't know. I think one thing is we don't know how long the immunity of this vaccine will last. The studies are so recent, the data is just coming out, and it's just not a sufficient amount of time to do that kind of monitoring and following up, which requires months, years, before you can make any kind of a claim that the vaccine would maintain and preserve immunity for any length of period of time. We know already that the antibody response following somebody who gets COVID appears to be rather short-lived, you know, based on what we know so far. So we don't know. The COVID vaccine may require two shots every 3-6 months to be protective. And of course, the more shots that are going to be required, the greater the risks for side effects from oversensitivity to the vaccine. I kind of performed a little mental experiment just in my head based on these AstraZeneca figures, which are quite controversial. And first, they first reported the Brazil studies. They did the trial in the UK and in Brazil, but the trial was not identical. So in Brazil, the group received a full dose. It was a two dose vaccine. So in Brazil, they received a full dose, and then the second dose was a half dose amount, and that reported the 70% efficacy. And then later, AstraZeneca came out that they reached 90% efficacy. But in that study, the individuals were given a half dose first and then a full dose. Well, if you just kind of think of that in your mind, that would seem to indicate that immunity would wane quickly. If the Brazilian dose were only getting a half, then being tested is getting 70%, whereas the UK group are getting a full dose and they're making a claim of 90. So I have some kind of questions about how long length of immunity that these vaccines are going to provide and offer. But the greater concern is perhaps safety. And we've discussed this before. Remember, these vaccines are being fast track now, and they're all applying for emergency use, which will even further fast track them. So these vaccines are not going to undergo the kind of rigorous review and evaluation that's necessary for Yeah.
Richard, I'm going to read what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. just had to say. Quote, I would like to draw your attention urgently to important issues related to the next COVID vaccine. For the first time in the history of vaccination, the so-called last generation RNA vaccines intervene directly in the genetic material of the patient and therefore alter the individual genetic material, which represents the genetic manipulation, something that was already forbidden until then considered criminal. This intervention can be compared to the genetic manipulated food, which is also highly controversial, even if the media and politicians currently trivialize the problem and even stupidly call for a new type of vaccine to return to normality. This vaccination is problematic in terms of health, morality, and ethics, and also in terms of genetic damage that, unlike the damage caused by previous vaccines, will be irreversible and irreparable. Dear parents, after an unprecedented RNA vaccine, you will no longer be able to treat the vaccine symptoms in a complementary way. They will have to live with the consequences because they can no longer be cured simply by removing toxins from the human body. Just as a person with a genetic defect like Down syndrome or Klinefelter syndrome, Turner syndrome, genetic cardiac arrest, hemophilia, cystic fibrosis, Rett syndrome, etc., because the genetic defect is forever. This means clearly, if a vaccination symptom develops after an mRNA vaccination, neither I nor any other therapist can help you because the damage caused by the vaccination will be genetically irreversible. In my opinion, these new vaccines represent a crime against humanity that has never been committed in such a big way in history. As Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg, that's W-O-D-R-G, an experienced doctor, said, in fact, this promising vaccine for the vast majority of people should be forbidden because it is genetic manipulation. The vaccine, developed and endorsed by Anthony Fauci and funded by Bill Gates, uses experimental RNA technology. Three of the 15 human guinea pigs, that's 20%, experienced, quote, serious adverse event. And note, messenger RNA and mRNA is the ribonucleic acid that transfers the genetic code of the DNA of the cell's nucleus to a ribosome in the cytoplasm, that is, the one that determines the order in which the amino acids of a protein bind and act as a mold. And then it's a couple questions to RFK. The first one, does coronavirus exist or not? Yes. Like many other viruses, does it have a cure? Yes, if you use the proper medicines and do not leave your health in the hands of corrupt and mercantile health systems. Are there good doctors? Yes, many. Some are acting discreetly, giving appropriate treatments. Others have been bolder. And there are many videos in the networks talking about these treatments. Are science investigating? Yes, and there's a world union calling for more doctors and scientists called Doctors and Scientists for Truth to expose the falsity of the treatment they have been given to the bug issue. Is it a pandemic? No. The World Health Organization changed the terms that referred to the pandemic before the bug was launched in order to end the pandemic. Is it contagious? Yes, like all flu. If I catch the virus, does it mean I will die? No. If you have symptoms, just take the appropriate medicines from the first day, strengthen the immune system, take anti-inflammatory and anti-influenza, and cure yourself at home. Can it be prevented? Yes. Being as clean as you should be and maintaining a high immune system, and you should also have ozone therapy, chlorine dioxide. By the way, that's the first time he's mentioned ozone therapy. That's good. And are the current infected and dead by, are the count of infected and dead by the virus certain? No. In the U.S., it was discovered that any data would in fact be 10% of that number because the causes of death were other diseases and the tests were not reliable. They gave false positives. Now, mind you, listen to what he just said. He said, only 10% of the people who have died in the United States died because of COVID. That means it's not a pandemic. Then it goes on. Was the virus created? Yes, in a laboratory. You know, you can read the rest of that for yourself, but he gives a very sobering. Now, one last quick thing here. There is another piece, and again, we've posted this article. I'm not going to read the whole article, but this is from a Dr. Jennifer Margulis. Quote, vaccinated children are sicker. Breaking science, vaccinated children are sicker than their unvaccinated peers, according to a landmark new study on vaccine safety entitled Relative Incidence of Office Visits and Cumulative Rates of Build Diagnosis Along the Axis of Vaccination, end quote. For over two decades, vaccine safety advocates have wondered if vaccinated children are sicker or healthier than their unvaccinated peers. These children's health advocates have asked the CDC to conduct studies to compare health outcomes in completely unvaccinated children to those in vaccinated children, as per the CDC's recommended schedule. Every parent in America, every doctor recommending vaccines should want to see these studies done. After all, in order to put the vaccine debates to rest, we must demonstrate that the current CDC recommended vaccine schedule is actually safe. But despite constant hand-wringing over declining public confidence in vaccines, the CDC refuses to do these studies. Their excuse has been that, quote, it would be unethical to withhold vaccines in order to study their safety. This excuse assumes that randomized controlled trials, where children are randomly separated into two groups, one gets vaccines and one which does not, are the only way to do such a comparison. But these days, plenty of families are choosing not to vaccinate or to selectively vaccinate their children can easily serve as the control group. So the CDC could perform retrospective epidemiological studies. After all, it is a retrospective epidemiological studies that are the studies the CDC has done that purportedly prove that vaccines don't cause autism. And then it goes into vaccinated children are sicker. Quote, aware of the firestorm surrounding vaccine safety, Dr. James Lynn Wheeler and Dr. Paul Thomas' analysis is scrupulous and thorough. They analyzed the data several different ways to account for potentially confounding factors such as an increasing tendency to avoid vaccination. They compared the new metric with the old measure of incidence, and they found that the new method correlates well but is more sensitive. And the conclusions were that those who are vaccinated are more likely to end up with asthma, rhinitis, breathing issues, behavioral issues, ADHD, respiratory infection, otitis media, ear pain, eye disorders, eczema, dermatitis, and all much higher in vaccinated children and unvaccinated children. So those are just some of the issues. And we, again, we have already posted everything that I'm saying so you can read the full reports. Final thoughts on that, Richard?
Yeah, I had a couple other points. One was, it was in a Forbes article, and this, I think, very, very important. This is Dr. William Hazeltine wrote the article, and we know Forbes is very, very pro-industry and pro-pharmaceutical industry. He's a former professor at Harvard Medical School for a couple decades, no, elder physician. But he said that it appears that the trials were, and as his quote, it appears that the trials, meaning for all these different vaccines, were intended to pass the lowest possible barrier of success. And he came out and he said that of the three major ones that we're looking at, Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, which he notes, they do not require that their vaccine prevent serious disease, only that they prevent moderate symptoms, which may be as mild as a cough or a headache. And then I was going through, and now there's a lot of talk about the herd immunity. So I found on the Minnesota State Health Department's website, and I'd rather go try to find what data I can within the conventional community.
Real quick, Richard, what you sent me early this morning from Johns Hopkins University posted something and then immediately took it down?
Yeah.
What was it?
Yeah. Oh, they were stating that the deaths, the COVID deaths, when they did this one professor at Johns Hopkins, when his group, they did the review of the number of COVID deaths, they found that they had all been manipulated.
There was no difference than a normal season. No extra deaths each year. They've been lying. They've been playing us. Right. They've been using us. Okay. Thanks a lot, Richard Gale. And we'll have a brand new article out next Wednesday. Powerful article. We're going to go in a moment out of the program on a very positive note with five principles that we could live by that could help us. Matthew McConaughey, the actor, at a commencement address. It's short, but it's very well done. Before then, however, for those of you who partook of too much calories and food and who need to detoxify, in-house, Glenn and the staff put together a revolutionary pure detox box, a whole box of stuff. You're going to get the brand new green apple and lemon stuff. You're going to get the detox vitamin. It's a whole capsule of detoxification nutrients. You're also going to get Power Berry Blast sample. You're going to get Supremacy sample. You're going to get the video detoxification and natural approach. You're going to get all this. Now, normally, this package would cost you $139.93. Today, it's only $69.99. You're getting half price, 50% off. Wow. So I think that's important. And you can give this, and that's a terrific gift, 50% off, and something that actually can be good for you today. I would do this for the next month. You're getting a month's supply, so do it every day. All right, the detox package to help you. Even if you ate well or fasted yesterday, you can still benefit from this. Everybody needs to detox. This helps you with your own home detox. And the video is terrific. It's an award-winning documentary, by the way. Call this number, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. I don't know if Neil's in today. If he is, you can call him at the Vitamin Closet at 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. I don't know if he's there or not, but if he is, if not, call the other number. But everybody should be detoxifying. Everybody benefits. So now we've made it easy. It's all in a box, and it'll be shipped out today. Let's close out our program today with some positive insights, five rules for the rest of your life by Matthew McConaughey.
Before I share with you some what I do knows, I want to talk with you about what I don't know. Now, I have two older brothers. One was in high school in the early 1970s. And this was a time when a high school GED got you a job. All right, and the college degree was exemplary. My other brother, Pat, was in high school in the early 80s. And by this time, the GED wasn't enough to guarantee employment. You needed a college degree. And if you got one, you had a pretty good chance of getting the kind of job that you wanted after you graduated. Now me, I graduated high school in 1988, got my college degree in 1993. And that college degree in 93 did not mean as much. It was not a ticket, it was not a voucher, it was not a free pass go to anything. So I asked the question, what does your college degree mean? It means you got an education. It means you have more knowledge in a specific subject, vocation. It means you may have more expertise in what your degree is in. But what's it worth? In the job market, out there today, we know the market for college graduates is more competitive now than ever. Now, some of you already have a job lined up. You've got a path where today's job is going to become tomorrow's career. But for most of you, the future is probably still pretty fuzzy. And you don't have that job that directly reflects the degree you just got. Many of you don't even have a job at all. Think about it. You've just completed your scholastic educational curriculum in life, the one that you started when you were 5 years old in kindergarten, up until now, and your future may not be any more clear than it was 5 years ago. You don't have the answers, and it's probably pretty damn scary. And I say that's okay, because that is how it is. This is the reality that many of you are facing. This is the world that we live in. The sooner that we become less impressed with our life, with our accomplishments, with our career, with whatever that prospect is in front of us, the sooner we become less impressed and more involved with that and these things, the sooner we get a whole lot better at doing them. So, I'm going to talk to you about some things I've learned in my journey. Most from experience, some of them I heard in passing, many of them I'm still practicing, but all of them I do believe are true. Now, they may be truths to me, but don't think that that makes them mine, because you cannot own a truth. So please think of these as signposts, approaches, paradigms that give some science to satisfaction. They're yours to steal, they're yours to share, like into your own lives, to personally apply in your own lives in your own way, should you choose to. So here we go. Number one, and this should come up on the Jumbotron. Life's not easy. Is it up there? Life is not easy. It is not. Don't try to make it that way. Life's not fair. It never was. It isn't now, and it won't ever be. Do not fall into the trap, the entitlement trap, of feeling like you're a victim. You are not. Get over it and get on with it. And yes, most things are more rewarding when you break a sweat to get them. Number two. I love this. Unbelievable is the stupidest word in the dictionary. Should never come out of our mouths. Think about it. To say, oh wow, what an unbelievable play. It was an unbelievable book, an unbelievable film, an unbelievable act of courage. Really? It may be spectacular, it may be phenomenal, most excellent or outstanding, but unbelievable? Uh-uh. Give others and yourself more credit. It just happened. You witnessed it. You just did it. Believe it. What about the other side of unbelievable? You know, that side when we humans underperform or act out of our best character. For instance, man flies a suicide jet into the World Trade Center. Millions die from diseases every day that we have cures for. Bob the Builder swears that he's going to have your house built by Thanksgiving, and you can't move in until Christmas the next year. Our best friends lie to us, and we lie to ourselves all the time. Unbelievable? I don't think so. Again, it just happens, and it happens every day. Nothing that we Homo sapien earthlings do is unbelievable. And if there's one thing you can depend on people being, it's people. So we shouldn't be surprised. We, us, are the trickiest mammals walking the planet. I'm not worried about the monkeys. I'm worried about you and me. Happiness is an emotional response to an outcome. If I win, I will be happy. If I don't, I won't. It's an if-then, cause and effect, quid pro quo standard that we cannot sustain, because we immediately raise it every time we attain it. You see, happiness demands a certain outcome. It is result reliant. And I say, if happiness is what you're after, then you're going to be let down frequently. And you're going to be unhappy much of your time. Joy, though, joy is a different thing. It's something else. Joy is not a choice. It's not a response to some result. It's a constant. Joy is the feeling that we have from doing what we are fashioned to do, no matter the outcome. Now, personally, as an actor, I started enjoying my work and literally being more happy when I stopped trying to make the daily labor a means to a certain end. For example, I need this film to be a box office success. You know, I need my performance to be acknowledged. I need the respect of my peers. All those are reasonable aspirations, but the truth is, as soon as the work, the daily making of the movie, the doing of the deed became the reward in itself for me, I got more box office, more accolades and respect than I ever had before.
We'll add the additional part in the archives. We're out of time, everyone. I want to thank you for taking your time. And we're posting the recent Annals of Internal Medicine, major respected journal, quote, effectiveness of adding a mask recommendation to other public health measures to prevent SARS-2 infection in Danish mask wearers, randomized controlled study. It did not show the big benefit from wearing masks. That's what I said. There's pro and cons on wearing the mask. There is not a pro and con on what happens when the mask is being worn and what it could do to your body. That's a different issue. Have a nice day, everyone.